Bonino gave it on. Kessel tried to return. Interrupted there. And given away, but Kessel couldn't take the gift pass. And then it's given away. Bonino tries to
score! Watch the puck roll right there. It rolls up and over. That's why he doesn't get good wood. Phil Kessel hard on and Hagelin hard on Dillon. And what a creative play by Bonino.
Sealed up by Dumoulin, looking for some help. It's scaled back around now, and Braun, a shot, he scores! Justin Braun let it go. It becomes a tie game with 4:05 to go.
The strength of Logan Couture on the puck, gets it back, and Braun, who had a rough game one, fires it off the post. You'll see it come towards the net. It's going to go off the post and in.
Any time, Braun and Vlasic out there.
One to the back, Letang has it, waits and gave it on over to Sheary. A shot, he scores!
Puck possession, dictate the terms, heads up play by Letang, a set face-off play by the Penguins, and Connor Sheary in goals in back-to-back games in the Stanley Cup Final, wins it in OT, and the Penguins are up. Two games to none.
Well, you scored in game one. Now you got an overtime winner in game two. Let's start with a game two overtime winner. What happened?
We had a set faceoff play there. Sid told me to line up on the wall and open up for a pass from Tanger there, and it just worked out perfectly.
Welcome back. Hour number three, Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis. Jay Farrar is in for Mitch Gallo, who's hanging out with the Alouettes today. Jack Armstrong on the NBA Finals, which get underway tonight in Oakland in about 30 minutes from now. Also in the Bay Area right now is Pierre Maguire.
Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Dagwoods. Once again, cult Montreal fans have named Dagwoods the best sandwich in Montreal. You gotta love a Dagwoods sandwich.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
Excellent, Mitch. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Well, we talked yesterday about the look that Sidney Crosby has, right? He's like he's in charge. It's his series. He's just taken over his series. This is not the first time he has directed a face-off play, but the fact that it's happened under this kind of microscope kind of drives home the point how committed and possessed he seems to be.
Oh, those are great points. I agree wholeheartedly. I think the biggest thing with Sidney right now is he wants the puck, he wants to dominate, and he's not deferring. He only defers when he knows he has a player that's wide open or he knows he can get a pass to someone else and make a creative play. Outside of that, he's taking total charge of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Now, he's had a lot of help, and part of it is a system that Mike Sullivan has drawn up. Part of it's the power play schematic that Rick Tocchet has helped draw up. But they've also had a lot of help in terms of unsung guys like Ben Lovejoy, Brian Dumoulin, Connor Sheary, Nick Bonino. There have been some unsung heroes here, but you're right. He's the guy right now.
Pierre, what are your duties as an assistant coach with the Pittsburgh 20-odd years ago was set plays off draws, right? I mean, can you go a little further than what we actually saw last night to help them win the game?
Well, they run a lot of different schemes, especially off that side of the ice, because it's playing to the strength of their center icemen, especially Malkin and Crosby. Being left-hand shot. So one set is what you saw there with the puck coming back and Connor Sheary coming off the wall and opening up in the high slot, because then it forces the defense to make a decision in terms of end zone coverage. There's another set face-off play. We showed this last night during the game as well, where Bonino's on the ice and Kessel, who's a right-hand shot, will line up on the left wing. The puck will come back to Kessel. They'll create a mini pick play. And then Kessel will walk to the inside part of the ice with the puck on his stick. And with his release, he can score quite often off of that. And they have a few other ones, too, but just on radio, it gets a little bit more convoluted. But set face, and I told you about this against Tampa. They had to do a bunch to manufacture offensive chances off offensive zone faceoffs because of the way Tampa was defending against them in the neutral zone. And they were able to do that.
Sid, when you look at him, when he came into the league, he was seen as a playmaker. After that, he worked on his shot, and he was a 50-goal scorer. And after that, he worked on his draw, and now he's over 50-something percent on draw. So he works on every detail, and that's why we're successful.
Chris Letang on Sidney Crosby.
That is so well said. I'm going to give you a quick Sidney Crosby story. When he was 16 years of age, we were in Helsinki, Finland for the World Junior. Eventually, in that World Junior, he became the youngest Canadian to ever score in a World Junior hockey game. But at the beginning, there were practices that were so frenetic and so fast-paced and hard-edged, and a lot of it was because guys were testing Crosby because he was young and he was the it guy. And one of those guys was Dion Phaneuf. And I remember standing with Gord outside the arena, and it was probably three or four stories down in the ground, believe it or not. It's an underground arena in Helsinki. And Sidney came over, and not too many of the guys were talking to him, and he was asking about how guys in the NHL take one-timers, because he said he thought that was the weakest part of his game, and he wanted to perfect that. So I gave him some ideas, and he eventually got videotapes of some of the ideas I got, and he started practicing those things. Now, that just shows you just now, this is a long time ago. This is, what, 11, 12 years ago. I'm just telling you, this guy's addicted to being the best he can be. And faceoffs was a huge problem for him when he came in the league. And I know he picked a lot of people's brains when it came to faceoffs. And now he's become one of the better guys on faceoffs.
Man, I'm telling you, you put your stick down, and the first thing you do is you think about how quickly you can get the jump on the other guy. You're cheating every draw. Every draw. Every centerman is trying to cheat in some way or another. And if you're not, you're going to lose every draw.
Former longtime NHL centerman Ray Ferraro with us about an hour ago from the same area where you are right now on Logan Couture, who is clearly frustrated, complaining that Crosby cheats and gets away with it because he's Crosby.
Okay, and not everybody cheats, and I agree with Ray. I remember in 1991, I think I told you this story before, I think there were 83 faceoffs in game one. And so after the game, we lost game one, and we got wiped out on faceoffs. I think they won 57 or 60 of the 83 faceoffs. So I made a tape of every single faceoff situation and convened a meeting. Bob Johnson actually asked me to do it. And so it was Mario Lemieux, Ron Francis, Brian Trotje, Ken Priestley, and Randy Gillen, our center iceman. And we came up with faceoff protocols because they had Bobby Smith, Mark Buro, Dave Gagne, and Neil Broughton. And they were cheating like all get out on our ice surface, and they crushed us in game one. So we came up with four different protocols center icemen had to do before they took a faceoff, and it worked. And it worked. But that's what one of the things, and this is a good, if you're a young player out there and you play center, Logan Couture has to know this is overtime. He's going against Crosby. You cannot allow Crosby to win that draw clean. You scramble it, you tie his stick up. You take and you spin, whatever you have to do. You cannot allow him to win that draw clean. Even if you know he's cheating, you cannot allow him to get a stick on the puck without taking his stick. You've got to take his stick. You can't try to win it. You got to try to draw it.
You know, as soon as I heard those comments, Pierre, I checked. Logan Couture's been around 50% for his entire career. However, the last two seasons, he has been significantly under 50%. So he hasn't just lost key faceoffs to Sidney Crosby in the Stanley Cup Final.
No, that's a fair point. I think he's also been dealing with some different injury situations, especially upper body ones. So that's been a little bit of a problem, too, but he doesn't complain very much. I really like him as a player. He had a chance to win game one twice, and he just shot high and wide. He had unbelievable looks at the net when this game was tied in the third period, and he just fired high and wide. Last night, though, again, and if I saw him, I'd say the same thing to him if he asked me. You can't let him win that draw clean. It's just that simple.
Here's Letang after the faceoff, and the Penguins have it. Goes over down, a quick shot, score! That's Sheary with a goal, and he wins it for the Penguins! Connor Sheary from the left-wing circle side shoots it in right by Jones, and the Penguins have won it, and ladies and gentlemen, Elvis. Yes, Elvis has just left the building.
That's how it's sounding on WXDX in Pittsburgh, and a legendary Mike Lang calling the game winner with Pierre McGuire in the Bay Area. After two games, the Penguins lead the Sharks 2-0. Where would this team be without Colin Sheary and Brian Rust?
Well, it's going to be good, but not nearly as good because both those guys can really skate, and that's totally changed their identity. I think the key guy that's changed everything, though, in Pittsburgh has been Mike Sullivan. Just because he's turned everybody loose, Connor Sheary and Brian Rust are playing for the Pittsburgh Penguins because Mike Sullivan told Jimmy Rutherford, we need to make our team quicker. They went out and acquired Carl Hagelin because Mike Sullivan had him in New York with the Rangers when he was an assistant coach because he knew his switch B would transition perfectly with the team in Pittsburgh for the style that they want to play. So Mike deserves a ton of credit here, along with Jimmy. Jimmy made those moves, so Jimmy deserves credit too. But Mike's the guy that really was the impetus for a lot of this stuff to happen.
And Pierre, whether it's due to the World Junior Tournament or the pressure the young players face at the college level or the major junior level, are rookies and sophomores better prepared than ever to contribute in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
No question. No question about it. It starts even earlier than that. It starts when they're 9 and 10 years old and they're playing in the Brick Tournament in Edmonton. And then you move forward to the Quebec Pee Wee Tournament, especially at the AAA level. And you're seeing more and more. Then you go to the under-16s, and you know, or U14 now. It's even U14, and then it's U16, and then it's, you know, all these different events internationally. Absolutely. Players have never been this prepared. Absolutely agree with that.
Well, I mean, we're going back home, take care of Game 3, and then move on from there. But, you know, they took care of home ice, and we got to do the same.
There is Mark Edward Vlasic. Pierre, you have always said you're never in trouble until you lose your first game on home ice, but you also said that if they go down 0-2, there's going to be more nervousness and more tension in the air on home ice for Game 3 than there normally would be.
No question there will be, absolutely. I mean, I got off the plane in San Francisco, not in San Jose, and I was walking through the airport, and people were asking me questions about their team. That's never happened before in San Francisco, and I've been coming here a long time, 25 years since the team's been here. That's never once happened to me. I checked into the hotel, and the first thing the man at the desk asked me is, how bad was our team beaten in Pittsburgh? I said, oh, not that bad. Do we have a chance? You know, those are the kinds of questions. I've never had those before from people in San Jose. So clearly people are really into their team, and they want them to do well. I think, Mitch, what you just said is very fair. They've got to get off to a good start, because if they don't, the trepidation in the building will be very problematic for their team. It'll almost be like a negative drain on the team.
It just doesn't seem like there's a lot of space for whatever reason in the offensive zone. Coaches will go through it with us tomorrow, and we'll figure it out.
I think they have some good back pressure. I think their forwards are doing a job. Good job coming back. I mean, we've got to be quicker, I think. If you watch the game, I mean, from the bench, in my mind, we didn't look quick. We've looked a lot quicker throughout this postseason with puck movement, and we haven't looked quick these two games.
Martin Jones, from his vantage point, he's certainly done his job through two games, looking for more offense. Logan Couture basically laying it out, as anybody who is watching it could see. The Penguins are making San Jose look not just slow, but immobile. So how do they turn this around?
They've got to get the puck in deep, and then you saw it on the Braun goal. That's exactly got to be their identity. You got to crash and bang and forecheck and then move it quickly to the point and get pucks through and then outman Pittsburgh at the point of attack. You know, it's interesting. Pete DeBoer, when I asked him his questions on the bench in the second period after the second TV timeout, I asked him about, you know, where his team was, and he says, the one thing I'm not happy about is we're one and done on every single chance. We're never getting rebounds or second-chance opportunities because Pittsburgh's playing a phenomenally intense, aggressive end-zone coverage, and you don't see a lot of room. So they got to move the puck quickly. They got to get it deep, move it quick, and try to break down that resistance that Pittsburgh's created for them.
So including these two games, 12 of the last 14 Stanley Cup final games have been one-goal games. You look at during the regular season, about 65% of games are within a goal with a minute to play. At playoff time, do you focus on the tightness and how every mistake could cost you, or does that risk kind of overloading a player, mentally speaking, at a critical time?
I think everybody's different, Rod. I think there's some guys that really let it eat them up, and there are other guys that just go out there and play. You know, I won't mention the players that had to eat them up, but I coached players in the final that were definitely intimidated by the moment. And there were other guys that they loved it. I mean, you never would have known. There was one guy on our team that was basically sleeping before the game in his stall, you know, and then he'd go out there and play unbelievably well. So everybody takes it a little bit differently. But the one thing I would say about the way it's been, Doc Emmerich and I have done the last 11 finals together. The competitive nature of the Stanley Cup final, I think, has ever been greater than it has been since the red line came out. And the reason why is because teams can come from behind. When the red line was in, you could not come from behind. So if a team got a 2 or 3 goal lead, you were not coming from behind because it was too easy to trap everything up.
I'm curious about the mindset of what has been a lethal power play in the postseason. And you kept telling us Penguins can't take more than two penalties a game against this power play. They only took one minor last night. They're doing a great job in that regard. You're thinking, okay, there's not enough room. They're on top of us. But, man, if we can just get to the power play, Thornton and Burns and Pavelski and all these guys, have they put that aside? Can you put that aside psychologically and concentrate on doing better 5-on-5 rather than waiting for the opportunity that might not come?
They're going to have to because Pittsburgh's playing unbelievably well and very disciplined. You know, Mitch, two penalties in the first game and San Jose scored once. One penalty in the second game. I mean, that is amazing discipline. I think in Game 7 against Tampa, it was two penalties, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, their discipline has been phenomenal. They don't play nearly as robust or as nasty, but they're smart. They angle well. They take you off the puck. They get in lanes. They block a lot of shots. They frustrate you. They track pucks on the back check. But, yeah, no, San Jose's got to concentrate a lot more on the 5-on-5 stuff. If they can drop penalties, great. But right now they've got to start get going here on 5-on-5 hockey.
All right, much more on Game 3 tomorrow night from the rink. Just a couple of other items here. Pierre, what's your favorite fourth line in hockey?
Cizikas, Martin, and Clutterbuck with the Islanders. Cizikas, 5-year deal. Great move.
5 years at what is it? What is it? $17 million? Five. So it's a little. It's less than four. It's between $3 and $4 million. He's 25 years of age. So the fact that he got this deal, would that lead you to think yes or no for Matt Martin?
This was the first of many that they're trying to get solidified. Cizikas is a very popular player on that team. And I won't tell you the other guys that circumnavigate around him, but I can tell you there are other guys either whose contracts are up or are about to be up that really will be happy that Cizikas is signed. It may want them or may help them want to stay there, I should say. So that's a big deal. As far as Martin, I got to think it's going to help. But I'm not saying that's the total thing because I think Matt Martin will go to market. Unless something unbelievable happens, I'd be surprised if he doesn't go to market.
And on another popular teammate, Aaron Ward with us in the last hour of the show yesterday, Pierre dropped this.
The style of coaching in L.A. is moderately similar to the coaching in Montreal. It's a very hierarchical, my way or the highway, I run my show. It's a very stern type of coach. This is a guy who's operated as a captain under this. I'm not saying give him the captaincy, but at 31... with the identity that Dustin Brown brings to your team both on and off the ice. And I've gotten to know him a little bit because when he did the piece on reorientation, homosexuality in sports, he's a guy from Western New York around Ithaca.
Right.
He's a very liberal thinker. He's a very all-encompassing guy from all accounts. From anybody who's played with him, I talked to Justin Williams. They love him. He is a great teammate.
And, you know, listening to Aaron Ward, everything about Dustin Brown that he was saying makes sense, except 6 years left at $5.8 million a year.
That's the conundrum. I mean, what Aaron said is bang on, but the problem is there's a salary cap in the NHL, and there are not a lot of people that are prepared to digest that number on a third or fourth line player, even though he's a great guy. He is a great guy. Everything he said, he was the Ontario Hockey League's Scholastic Player of the Year when he played for the Guelph Storm. I mean, he everything Aaron said is right on, so there's no debate there. The problem is the contract. Remember what Roberto Luongo says? Said when he was in Vancouver, I hate my contract. It stinks, but he didn't say it nicely.
He said it sucks.
Remember?
Yeah.
Well, I don't like using that word, so you can say it.
All right.
But, yeah. But remember? And it's the same thing for Dustin Brown. It's great financially, but it's going to hurt him because it's going to limit where he can go. I have to think at some point he's probably a candidate for a buyout.
Yeah. All right, so are you going to watch Cleveland Golden State, or you got something
absolutely.
Else planned?
Here's what I'm doing right now. As soon as I hang up with you, one of my former players who I coached at St. Lawrence, Jamie Baker, who played in the NHL for a long time, he's turning 50, but he's going to Nashville tomorrow. So I'm going to meet him downstairs, and we're going to get together, and then I'm going to watch basketball.
We are going to talk about this, what figures to be a classic. I was pretty good for six games a year ago. Now that everybody's healthy, it might go to the next level with Jack Armstrong in about 10 minutes. Thanks, Pierre.
Please tell Coach Armstrong I said hi. He's an awesome guy. When I lived in Toronto, I got to know Jack really well. He's a tons of fun.
Talk to you from the rink tomorrow.
You got it. Oh, no, no, no. Yeah, you will, because I'll be at practice. You will talk to me from the rink tomorrow. Absolutely.
Right, we will, but there won't be any hockey, because Game 3 is Saturday, of course.
I know, but there'll be practice. We'll have practice tomorrow. Yeah.
Thanks, Pierre.
Bye, Mitch.
Bye-bye.
Hockey Insider Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub.